Fan Evening Show right here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Jack Hillgrove with you until 10:35. You might not know this Hillgrove, but you definitely know the one on the Fan Hotline right now. Entering his 55th season as the voice of the Panthers basketball program, it's my grandpap, Bill Hillgrove, coming off of the Panthers' lone exhibition matchup against the Pioneers of Point Park, 93-62, the final. Pap, thanks for hanging on and joining us tonight. I certainly appreciate it. We'll talk Pitt-Syracuse in a moment, but for right now, let me know what jumped off the page for you for the Panthers basketball program in their 30-plus point win over Point Park.
Okay, Jack, you know, let's just take a look at the second-team preseason ACC guy, Ishmael Leggett. 24 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists. That's a pretty good night at the office.
It is.
And his defense is just outstanding. I have a chance to kind of pay attention and watch things that I want to watch instead of having to follow the ball. And his footwork on defense is just absolutely almost letter perfect. And that's what really took its toll. Early on, Point Park, I think, was 5 for their first 10 triples, and they tied the game once. But then, when the Panthers' superior height and talent took the game over, they made 2 of their last 12 triples, and that kind of told the story that everybody expected. Panthers out-rebounding the Pioneers by 12, but also the just jumping off the page in his first Pitt appearance was former Florida State great Cameron Corhan. He's a true 5 guy. He's got natural ability for the post play, soft hands. Well, Cameron ended up with 14 points and 11 rebounds. When you have a double-double in your first appearance in a new uniform, you just tip your hat. Jalen Lowe, 22 points. So it's Leggett with 24, Lowe with 22. And the only other guy in Dubs was Corhan. So they just took care of business, and it was great to see some new faces. Damian Dunn, he's a smooth player, transfer from Houston. Brandon Cummings played very well, played 17 minutes plus, and his older brother Nelly was in the audience tonight, and
nice.
I talked to Nelly, and he's playing overseas, and I said, how's it going? He said, well, I was in England, but I'm between teams now, but I'm going to go back. And I said, hey, you're only young once. Enjoy the trip. I enjoyed Papa Amadou Kanté. He had a couple of blocks and did some good things late. And the Graham twins are just they're gritty. They play a lot of defense. Guillermo was only 1 for 6 outside the arc. But, you know, they still give you that length and getting into the passing lanes and, you know, disrupting what Point Park was trying to do. So, all in all, I think it was a pretty good exhibition game, and now they got to wait. I think Radford plays a game Thursday night when Pitt is playing Syracuse, and so the Radford game, the season opens for real on November 4th.
Yes, it does. George Michalowski covers Pitt Hoops for Pittsburgh Sports Now, and he had Bub Carrington on his podcast right after Bub got drafted. And one of the things that Bub talked about right away was how deep this Pitt team can be this year, obviously without Bub, who's now in the NBA on to bigger and better things. It sounds like, based off of your quick synopsis there, Pap, that the depth for this Pitt basketball team is really there if everybody can stay healthy.
Exactly. And that depth, you know, it took its toll. I give Kevin Reynolds credit. His Pioneers came in and, gave him a battle early on and scared him with a couple of triples. But, you know, when the depth and talent took over, there's not much the Pioneers could do. I really enjoyed watching this team. And, without the headset on, I can hear the Oakland Zoo and some of the comments that they make, and some of them are pretty funny. but I can also pay attention to what Jeff Capel does in terms of coaching, and especially the young players like Cummings and Papa Kanté. He was on them, and you can just see he's building them for the future. And I think that's why a lot of guys want to play for Jeff Capel, because he's going to make them better. And I think I witnessed it a little bit more firsthand tonight because no headset.
Bill Hillgrove, voice of the Panthers, with us on the Fan Hotline. The starting lineup tonight, Pap: Corrin, Leggett, Lowe, Diaz, Graham, Guillermo Diaz, Graham, and Zach Austin. I mean, it is an exhibition game against a team that's, what, Division II, but do you get the sense that maybe that might be the starting five as we get going here into meaningful basketball games, or could there be some shuffling?
Well, I think right now you probably go with those guys, and Damian Dunn ended up playing 20 minutes. So, you know, he had the most minutes coming off the bench. And then Brandon was next with 17. So, you know, they're basically, they're deeper. And you know, last year they kind of had to go with a 7-man rotation. I see this being a 9-man rotation, and I think that augurs well. It's going to be interesting. They've got Radford, and then they got Murray State. And, of course, they've got that Greenbrier trip, which I'll probably miss. I think Jeff Hathorn's going to have to cover that while I get on the charter to go to Louisville. It's a, you know, Friday-Sunday basketball thing, and, of course, the Louisville game's sandwiched in between. So I'll probably be with Pitt, and hopefully that'll be a meaningful game. Like, hey, this Thursday night is meaningful. I think, you know, from now on in, as they get into the meat of the ACC schedule, Pat Narduzzi knows that his guys have to be ready for dogfights.
Yeah, let's get into that football matchup on Thursday night. Knowing you, you're probably pretty darn close to nearing your prep on the Orange, nearing completion. What jumps off to you as far as they go? I mean, I would have to imagine it starts at the quarterback position.
Tom McCord with 19 touchdowns thrown. Their passing attack has been without one of their leading receivers who, for personal reasons, hasn't been around the team. But they still have some receivers who can do some damage. And Gadsden, the hybrid tight end, he really is a wide receiver in a tight end's body. He can be dangerous as well. And LaQuint Allen is a very fine running back. So, you know, they can put up the offense. But what I think jumps off the page with the Orange defensively is that they're one of the leading third down teams in the country. 30%. And so, you know, I think the Panthers are going to have to work to get every point that they earn, and I think it'll be a good game.
We saw, and we've seen a ton out of Eli Holstein, obviously, to start the season, and he has deserved a lot of the praise that he has received. But he's a freshman quarterback, redshirt freshman, coming off of a shaky performance against Cal. And he's got a little bit more time to obviously prepare for Syracuse on this Thursday. Is that kind of the next step, you think, for Holstein as a young quarterback? Because not everybody's not perfect. You're going to play bad games. It was really the first one that he had, and now he's obviously got to bounce back from it. So do you think this is kind of the next step in his development as far as being a pretty darn good Division I quarterback?
No question, and I like the way he handled the post game, and like what he said ever since. He knows that, you know, that bad performance was on him, and I don't see it happening two games in a row. So we'll just have to wait and see. Hey, Cal, despite their record, and they've been kind of snake bitten, they've got a pretty darn good defensive front, defensive back seven. That, you know, all the interceptions. They're a pretty good team. It's just that the Panthers were very fortunate to get that high snap, and their field goal kicker kind of knuckled it, and that might have won the game for them, but it didn't happen, and the Panthers are very lucky to have survived that one.
They are, and I think you can take a lot of good stuff out of that Cal game as well, because the defense hung in there, and this defense is getting better. Kyle Lewis, Rasheem Biles, a bunch of dudes flying to the ball, creating turnovers. Are you starting to see the defense starting to become a little bit more dynamic and a little bit more impactful as this season rolls along and they try to get to 7-0?
Yeah, no question about it. 11 tackles and 6 sacks, I think, is a statement. And not a lot of defenses can put those numbers up against a pretty good quarterback in Mendoza. And I think, you know, it started with them being able to corral their running game and then put it all on Mendoza, and eventually that defense got after him. I see much better speed at linebacker, and I think that's one of the keys to this Narduzzi defense.
Bill Hillgrove with us on the Fan Hotline. We'll let you get going, Pap. Hey, before we do, Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m., it seems like Alan Green being introduced as the new director of athletics at the University of Pittsburgh. A couple of questions. Number one, is it fitting into your schedule tomorrow to go down to the press conference, potentially meet him? And number two, what do you make of the decision to bring him over to the University of Pittsburgh as the next AD?
Yes, I will be there. And yes, I have some friends at the University of Tennessee. And everybody has nothing but glowing comments about Alan Green. So I'll be anxious to meet him and just, you know, kind of get a feel for what he's all about. And I think we'll do that tomorrow.
Bill Hillgrove, Pap with us on the Fan Hotline. Pap, thanks for sticking around. I'll let you get on the road back to home. Tell Nani I said hi and I love you, and I love you both. And we'll talk to you soon. I'll see you Thursday. I'm going to the game, so I'll talk to you then. Cool.
All right. Love you, Jack, and keep up the good work.
I'm gonna do my best. Oh, Nani's there. Love you guys.
All right. You take care.
All right, guys. Take care. Little genuine grandfather, grandmother, grandson moment for you. Live radio. Nothing like it. Joel Nelson. All right. How are we doing with the same game parlay? Celtics up 113 to 87.
I saw Brunson was back at the free throw line for a bit there.
Was he? Okay. Does Al Horford have four rebounds since we talked to Pap? Probably not. Brunson, 22, with a quarter to play, and Al Horford still has two rebounds. I think that's probably going to get me. I think that'll end up getting me tonight. Al Horford, shame on me. Early season NBA, relying on a 38-year-old big man to carry the water and get to six rebounds.
Jason Tatum gets a lot of rebounds.
He does.
For those guys. It's almost like he's a center for them.
Not a whole lot of rebounds in this game, period. That makes sense. They're both shooting 57% from the field. The Knicks have eight turnovers. Celtics only have two turnovers. That's the story and why the game's 113 to 87 at the end of the third quarter. All right. Rolling along here on the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the fan text line at 412-928-9370, brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Just finished talking to my grandpa, the voice of the Panthers for 50 plus years, talking about Pitt football this week, and we can get into that more as the 9 o'clock hour goes on. And if you're out there still listening, give me a call at 412-928-9370 if you want to talk Pitt or the Steelers. We've been talking a lot about the black and gold tonight as well. So I'm anxious to see this game on Thursday night. Number one, because I'm a diehard Pitt fan and they're 6-0, and I think that they have a very legitimate chance to get to 7-0 with a potential win on Thursday, and that very much excites me as a fan. But if you're not familiar with who I am also a sports anchor, sports reporter with WTOV9 in Steubenville Wheeling. Our main college team in the Steubenville Wheeling market is Ohio State. It goes probably Ohio State 1, West Virginia 2, and then you can sprinkle in the Panthers, Notre Dame, Michigan, surprisingly. A lot of Michigan fans in our area, which I find peculiar. And that's about it. I'd probably maybe even go Youngstown State. I see a lot of Youngstown State gear around town, too. Anyway, so Ohio State's the cream of the crop. In 2023, I saw Kyle McCord play four home games. I think it was four or five. The other thing, too, that I'm looking forward to telling people, no matter how far I get in this business, as a young person, watching Marvin Harrison Jr. play in person was so fun. Like, the guy was as dominant of a college football player I think I've ever seen. And we're going to talk more about another dominant college football player that is being honored on Thursday night coming up. Let me think here. Western Kentucky, Maryland, Penn State, and Youngstown State. So it was four. I saw him play four times last year. I had to get that straight. Ohio State fans, and there might be some of you out there listening. I know Mike's Beer Bar is a big Ohio State bar. They obviously sponsor the PM team. So if you're out there and you want to chime in, go ahead. Give us a little bit of insight on Kyle McCord. The way that I interpreted Kyle McCord at Ohio State after seeing him play, this is just my opinion, I thought he was pretty damn good. He wasn't C.J. Stroud, and he definitely wasn't Justin Fields, but he was a pretty darn good quarterback. So much so that I think that if they beat Michigan last year and he doesn't throw that interception on the final drive, they only lost that game by 6 points to the eventual national champs. And obviously, I know that's a little bit different because the way that that rivalry is, I mean, Ryan Day is probably one loss to Michigan away from losing his job. It's probably not going to happen this year. That's neither here nor there. But I think that if Ohio State beats Michigan last year, Kyle McCord is probably still Ohio State's quarterback. I thought he was pretty darn good last year. He threw a bunch of incompletions on the final drive of the game, but he orchestrated a 15-play, 65-yard drive on the road to beat Notre Dame last year. And if you remember that game, it was nuts. The ending was absolutely crazy. Emeka Ogbuka made a couple of splash plays. Julian Fleming, Cade Stover, of course, Marvin Harrison Jr. gets him on the doorstep under a minute to go. An intentional grounding penalty sets them back. They hang in there, and they get down to the one-yard line and win. Hostile environment, good Notre Dame team. McCord marches them right down the field pretty much, and they win the football game. I thought he was a pretty serviceable quarterback. Like, I'm looking at Will Howard for them this year, and I'm like, okay, it's a little bit more of an upgrade, especially with what he can do with mobility. But I say that, and I digress to say that I think Kyle McCord's a pretty damn good QB. And he's shown that at Syracuse. 19 touchdowns so far this season through the air. Over 2,000 yards. That's more yards and touchdowns than Eli Holstein. And think about all you Pitt fans out there, myself included, that are raving about the kid, Eli Holstein, and rightfully so. He's been pretty good. Think about what they're saying about Kyle McCord up in Syracuse. One of the better quarterbacks they've had since Ryan Nassib, who is pretty good for them. They're 5-1. It's going to be a tough game for Pitt. And the road gets tougher. Saturday against SMU, November the 2nd. But we can't obviously look too far ahead to that because Kyle McCord and Syracuse are coming to town. I think Pitt wins. I hope Pitt wins. Please win. Shout out the Loyal Sons. But right now it's a 6-point spread. My heart wants to bet Pitt -6, but I don't know. Especially coming off of a little bit of an extended period here. All right, Fan Evening Show rolling along here on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. More on the Panthers, more on the Syracuse game, and more on a wide receiver being honored Thursday night at Acrisure Stadium. And unfortunately, we have to relive something with said wide receiver being honored. That's all coming up on the Fan Evening Show. Things are happening, Jolie. 7:52 remaining. 128-95. Is Al Horford on the floor? No. Peyton Pritchard is, though. I'm a big Peyton Pritchard guy.
Him and Sam Hauser, you know, whenever one of them is going to enter the starting lineup for the Celtics, they can have some pretty good games. That's, you know, if you're going to win a championship, you got to do it with some really good depth, and the Celtics sure have that.
All right, moving on, because in about 5 minutes, actually less than 5 minutes, the Penguins take on the Calgary Flames, 9:30 puck drop. Are they 2 hours behind? I'm totally putting you on the spot. Is Calgary Mountain Time or are they West Coast? We're Googling as the live show. They are Mountain Time, so it's 7.
Mountain, yeah.
Which makes sense. If they were West Coast, it'd be a 10:30 game, I'm sure. I heard Andrew and Chris talking about this today, and if you want to rewind on your Odyssey app, unrelated, I had a chat with Grandpap Bill Hillgrove. A couple of you guys texting in. Chad said, interviewing your pap, best thing I've heard all day. Great show. Big fan of the opinions and the family ties. Appreciate you guys chiming in and letting us know. Very flattered to hear it. All right, anyway. Oh, my God. Look at the Flames alternates, Jolie. Those are dope. I also have always wished the Penguins did like a gold jersey with, well, they did, but it like, I don't know, something different.
Something like when the Pirates on Sunday home games would wear those gold jerseys with the black numerals and the black hat with like, I think that had the stripes with it, the really like old school looking hat. If the Steelers and Penguins had jerseys as similar as possible, what just something like that.
What about the idea of like a shared design? Like, because they already already share the colors.
Why not? Just they like already share the colors.
Like a shared, not like a logo, but just like a kind of, like a design. There's probably copyrights and all kinds of legal mumbo jumbo that would prevent that. But I think that would be pretty damn cool.
I think they'll make a way to happen. They'll make a, you know, they'll find a way to make that happen in some capacity, I would think. Again, Pittsburgh is the only one where the colors of all the professional sports teams are all very consistent.
Yeah, and
black
and
gold.
I don't know if it was with you or with Charlie. While back, I brought that up, and somebody texted in and brought up Seattle, and that's the only other one that's pretty damn close. With the Mariners, the Seahawks.
They only have two teams, though. We've got three.
That's a good point.
Or whenever they get an NBA team again.
Yeah. All right, so Pens and Flames in a couple of minutes, and Tristan Jarry's a healthy scratch tonight. And this is something that I'm totally going to steal from Pony because he talked about it earlier today. But he's hit the nail on the head. Throw Tristan Jarry on waivers and see if there's a team out there that will bite the bullet and pick up the contract. He is under contract through 2027, 2028. This, if you count this year, which I do because they've only played a handful of games, it's 4 years of Tristan Jarry left at $5.375 million, which is, I believe, near the top when it comes to goalies, at least in the top half. And for what you're getting out of Tristan Jarry, it ain't worth it. Jarry's just outside of the top 10, 13th highest paid goalie. But some of the names that are ahead of him, like right ahead of him, Grubauer, Igor Shesterkin, Binnington, and Jacob Markstrom are right there. Like, actual dudes, actual pretty damn good goalies. This year, so far, Tristan Jarry, a 5.47 goals against average and a save percentage of under significantly under 900, 833. It's only three games, I get that, but like, what are we what are we doing? And honestly, with Yoel Blomqvist, is that how we have officially decided that that's how his name is pronounced? Yoel or Yoel? I'm going to start calling you Yoel. It's spelled the same as you, Joel Nelson, but I think it's Yoel Blomqvist. And I totally could be wrong. And if you're out there texting and you know how to and you want to send a text to the text line and phonetically spell his name out for us, I'm all in and seeing what he can bring to the table. They're high on him. He's only 22 years old. 52nd overall pick in 2020. And sometimes when it gets to second and third round picks in hockey, it seems like it's sometimes hit or miss. This guy's, from what I've been able to understand, has exceeded a lot of expectations and outperformed as a prospect. And could be potentially the next franchise goalie that the Penguins have. It's not Tristan Jarry. I'm sorry. We've seen enough of Tristan Jarry to really, really believe that he can carry you through multiple playoff series the way that Marc-Andre Fleury and Matt Murray did in the Stanley Cup runs, at least in my lifetime. That's the big problem. That is the overhanging problem of the Penguins problem tree. And then there's a bunch of small branches. One of those branches, at least I think, and you guys can come at me for it if you want, but it's the fact that the core of Crosby, Malkin, and Letang has just been retained. There was a window for the Penguins to cash in on a guy like Letang or Malkin and reload with talented younger players and draft picks, and they obviously didn't. And don't get me wrong, there will come a day where all three of them, who the hell knows, all three of them might go out at the same time, and that would be one of the more emotional days in this city's history when it comes to sports. And I'm very much looking forward to an adult life or an older adult life of bringing those guys back and honoring them, kind of like when Jaromir Jagr was brought back last year to have his jersey hung up in the rafters. Like, I'm looking forward to all of that. But as a realist and somebody that demands excellence from the sports teams that I root for, like every fan should, I'm going to have a hard time looking at the tenure of Crosby, Malkin, and Letang from 2018 till now. And there's more to do with that than just those three, but those are the cogs in your franchise. Does a lot of that have to do with Mike Sullivan shuffling lineups, hiring incompetent coaches to coach goalies and power plays and things of that nature? Sure. And being stuck in his ways? Sure. Does a lot of that have to do with insert general manager here swinging and missing on trade acquisitions and giving up high draft picks slash not spending enough money in the offseason, or not really even being able to spend enough money in the offseason to bring guys in to support the big three? Yes. But Crosby, Malkin, and Letang are still at the forefront of it all. Have been for well over a decade now. So part of me, while I'm going to very much look forward to the rest of my life as a Penguin fan, celebrating everything that they have done for this franchise, four Stanley Cup appearances and three titles, I'm going to have a hard time not looking at the last 5-6 years. I am. That's just the way that it goes. One of those other branches on the Penguin problem tree that I talked about, kind of in that whole spiel about Crosby, Malkin, and Letang, this offseason. I mean, Kevin Hayes scored the other night, yay, on a power play, yay. Penguins getting a power play goal. It's kind of like the Steelers getting an offense or a first down under a Matt Canada offense. It's like, yay, progress. But what did the Penguins do in the offseason that got you excited at all? The answer to that question, boys and girls, is nothing. They didn't let him walk. They traded Jake Guentzel for Michael Bunting and had a chance to potentially bring him back in free agency, but he got a bag from Tampa Bay. Close to what, $9 million a year? Penguins weren't going to give that up, especially with Erik Karlsson underperforming for making $10 million a year. We'll get to that in a moment. And other guys filling out the Penguins lineup. Like Lars Eller, hell of a hockey player in like 2018. Wasn't he a part of that first Vegas Golden Knights team? Or one of them. He was part of one of those. Good player there. Anthony Beauvillier, hated that guy when he was on the Islanders. And as a Penguins fan, if you hate somebody on the Islanders or the Rangers or the Flyers, they're probably a pretty good player or an absolute goon. And Beauvillier was a pretty good player. Not really in 2024. He doesn't do a whole lot for me. Like, okay. There are two bright spots, I'll call three bright spots that I'll call the Penguins. For the Penguins so far this year. Number one, I think Joel Blomqvist, however we're going to pronounce his name, I'd like to see what he can provide. Now, Alex Nedeljkovic getting the start in net tonight. He was injured to start the year. Provided, you know, some pretty good play down the stretch last year when the Penguins were trying to make the playoffs because Tristan Jarry was crapping down his leg. I'm okay with Nedeljkovic and Blomqvist kind of splitting the time there. I don't need to see Tristan Jarry. Number two, I like Jesse Puljujärvi. I like the fact that he was kind of a highly touted prospect with Edmonton, kind of fizzled out and has seemed to have found a home in Pittsburgh and is pretty darn good in the bottom six. I like when reclamation projects kind of pay off, i.e. Justin Fields and me clamoring for him to start the Jets game until Russell Wilson kind of went off. And number three, and he's not even on the roster right now, I believe he was sent down to the Baby Pens, is Rutger McGroarty. Got a highly touted prospect the Penguins trade for in the offseason, their biggest move of the offseason, makes the opening night roster. Is that partially because guys like Brian Rust were hurt? Yes. But I'd like to see what he can do because he's really the only shred of a young, up-and-coming player that the Penguins can rely on for their future. I mean, Michael Bunting is still in his upper 20s, even though they just traded for him. Like, his shelf life isn't what Rutger McGroarty's is. They only have a handful of guys, less than a handful of guys with that kind of shelf life. One of them, the goalie. One of them, McGroarty, and the other one, who has kind of failed to crack the NHL roster, was Jonathan Gruden. Played in 13 games last year, scored one goal. Three games in 22-23, nothing. Swinging and missing on prospects. Swinging and missing on trade targets. Erik Karlsson. It just doesn't get me excited to watch the Penguins. And that's just unfortunately how I feel about them. It's an opinion business. I have an opinion. I'm sticking to it. It might not make you happy, but it is what it is. All right, Jolie. Al Horford finished with 3 rebounds. And I believe, no, Brunson only had 22. So I missed the same game parlay by 2 legs.
That's one where, Jack, we just needed a more competitive game than what it was with the Celtics winning by, what, around 20-something points, 30-something points. So if there was a more competitive fourth quarter, I think you probably would have cashed. Otherwise, it's pretty good, all things considered. Just a bad beat that the Celtics won this game by 23 points, and the starters for both sides didn't really get to play in the fourth quarter since it was already a blowout at that point. Just a bad beat.
You'll have that from time to time.
That's part of sports betting, you know?
Indeed it is, and I wonder if Jason Tatum will be super corny in this post-game interview here with this TNT sideline reporter. Probably not. We were talking about that in the back, too, about how we just copied Kevin Garnett. We did it! Give me a break. He's an easy guy to root for, though. As a cute kid, really good, goes about everything the right way. So, yeah, I mean, I guess. 37 points tonight for Jason Tatum in the opening night. Flames on a power play. Nedeljkovic with a pretty darn good stop. About a minute and a half into the contest. Still no score. All right, coming up, more of the Fan Evening Show. Didn't get into another pit topic. Kind of went on a little Penguins tangent there. Larry Fitzgerald is being honored at the Pitt-Syracuse game on Thursday. I believe they're calling it Larry Fitzgerald Day at Acrisure Stadium. They'll honor him during the game on Thursday night. And with that, unfortunately, we have to talk about one former talk show host on this station voting for another in the Heisman Trophy race in 2003. Ron, I love you. You're probably not listening. You're probably enjoying yourself in sunny Florida, but we're going to give you some sour grapes coming up on the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jack Hillgrove at Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. PetFest 24, it's presented by Subaru. It's back October 27th at Rockwell Park in the East End, 9:30 in the morning till 4 o'clock. Bring your four-legged friends to meet vendors, participate in costume contests, get photos with Santa, and join in the blessing of the pets at 9:30 a.m. Donation at the door benefits the Salvation Army, and it's brought to you by Bully Max Dog Food and Forever Lawn. For more information, go to 937thefan.com. All right. We could talk a little bit more about this as we enter the 10 o'clock hour, the nightly sports call with the fine folks at KDKA-TV and us here at 93.7 The Fan at 10:35 on KDKA Plus and right here on The Fan. Thursday, a big football game for the Panthers. I didn't even mention, I'm leading you up to the nightly sports call. My name's Jack Hillgrove. Till then. Okay, here we go. Thursday, a big game for the Panthers, taking on the Syracuse Orange. 7:30, Pitt trying to go 7-0 for the first time since 82. They're already 6-0 for the first time since Dan Marino played. But it's Larry Fitzgerald Day. Pretty damn cool. Like, Larry Fitzgerald was awesome. And I'm almost... Joel, when did you... How old are you? When did you graduate high school and college?
Graduated high school in 15 and college in 19.
Okay, so you're a couple years older than me, and I know you're not a Pitt guy, but you would if I were your age, I would probably have more of a recollection of Larry Fitz. My earliest Pitt memory is probably the 04 season. They got killed by Urban Meyer in Utah in the Fiesta Bowl, 35-7. That's the earliest I remember watching a Pitt football game. I was like 6. Now, I've been to games, I just don't remember Larry Fitzgerald in a Pitt uniform, which kind of stinks because he was really, really good. But he finished second in the Heisman voting in 2003 to Jason White. And I'm not going to sit there and say, and with hindsight being 2020, because Jason White didn't pan out in the National Football League virtually at all. We've seen that time and time again. Like, Troy Smith won the Heisman for Ohio State. It was like a 6th-round pick. I think had a cup of coffee with the, was it the Ravens? I think it was the Ravens, and then obviously didn't amount to anything. White wasn't drafted in 05. He had a tryout with the Chiefs at one point, and they didn't sign him. Tennessee signed him as an undrafted free agent for 2 years, but had some injury problems, just couldn't obviously crack the field, and it's tough for undrafted quarterbacks, let alone undrafted players, period, to make something of themselves in the NFL. I'm not going to sit here and say Larry Fitzgerald should have won the Heisman because of Jason White's lack of success professionally versus some of the other quarterbacks that finished in this Heisman race in the top 10 and Larry Fitzgerald obviously being second. I'm just basing it solely off the numbers. Larry Fitzgerald, 92 receptions, 1,672 yards, and 22 touchdowns as a sophomore. And he had a year of prep school. He was only at Pitt for 2 years, and 2 years plus the prep school year, he was able to leave for the NFL after only 2 years at Pitt. Pretty damn good decision. He gets drafted in the first round high by the Cardinals, and we know what happened there. Like, as a wide receiver, and this is also in an era, at least I believe, more so for, what am I trying to say? The Heisman Trophy now is such a quarterback of the year award. Back then in 2003, I think it was you were more inclined to have guys like running backs and wide receivers winning the thing, despite Eric Crouch, Carson Palmer winning it, Chris Wenke. I mean, there were guys like Fitzgerald and really, really good skill players like Adrian Peterson, who might have had a case to win it. Reggie Bush obviously won it in 05. Troy Smith was 07. We were talking about him. To me now, it's such as a quarterback of the year award. And also, too, you look at the numbers, Jason White and a lot of these guys that were in the top 10 for the Heisman. Jason White had 10 interceptions. He had 40 touchdowns, and the guy that finished third, and we're going to get to some of the quarterbacks here in a moment, but the guy that finished third was a quarterback. He had 29. Matt Leinart was in here. He had 38. I mean, Jason White, 40 touchdowns. It's impressive, 3,800 yards. But 10 interceptions to me, and I could just be totally talking bias out of my rear end, but I believe Larry Fitzgerald was the best player in the country in 2003. So happy to see him getting his recognition more so on Larry Fitzgerald Day on Thursday night. And obviously he was the latest to have his number retired by Pitt Football number one. All right, Joel, you ready for some of the other names in the 2003 Heisman race? You're not cheating back there, are you?
No, I'm not going to get any of these if you were to.
I mean, you know the names. I'll give you the non-quarterbacks. So Larry Fitzgerald finished second. Chris Perry from Michigan finished fourth. He was a first-round pick of the Bengals. Darren Sproles from Kansas State finished fifth. And Mike Williams from USC, 10th overall pick in 05 by the Lions, he finished eighth. So the guy that finished seventh, B.J. Simmons from Texas Tech, can't say I heard of him. I'd be totally lying if I did. 5,800 yards that year, though. Holy cow, 52 touchdowns, 22 interceptions. All right, number nine. Think about it. 03. Didn't go to a Power 5 school. I'm grinning as I'm...
Randy Moss?
No, we're doing just quarterbacks. It's Ben.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So all the guys in that 04 draft class are here. Eli finished third in the Heisman race in 03. Phillip Rivers was seventh and Ben was ninth. And then obviously those guys were in that order selected in the draft. It went Manning, Rivers, Roethlisberger in the Heisman race and obviously in the NFL draft too. So pretty cool. We didn't miss anybody, did we? No. Ben that year, 4,400 yards, 37 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Slinging it for Miami of Ohio. If I remember correctly, too, he had some pretty good rushing stats. It was freshman year. He had over 100 yards on the season and three touchdowns, seven rushing touchdowns in his career, fitting for number seven. All right, Fan Weather brought to you by Sun Chevrolet. It's brought to you by Sun Chevy. Check out the 24 Silverado 1500 at 1.9% financing, 36 months with approved credit through GM Financial. Full terms, conditions at sunchevy.com. Low 55 tonight, high is 78 tomorrow. Beautiful weather. Get out and do some stuff. The last half hour or so coming up next right here on the Fan Evening Show, we'll talk a little bit more about the NBA, Jolie, if you're up for it, and also look ahead to the World Series because I promised that earlier in the show, and we'll talk Dodgers and Yankees. And if you're out there and you want to get a Steelers take in, give us a call. Now's your last chance. I'm Jack Hillgrove on the Fan Evening Show.